Well, good morning. Paul von Gertz here, Knife River Heritage and Cultural Center. News from Knife River. Today I'm going to tell you about the events that took place and some history from Knife River from the month of December. I'm always about a month behind here, but a lot of this news is still good. And so with that, I'm going to get going here because I want to give you as much news as I can here within the next 29 minutes. December 8th, 1941, Knife River goes to war. Many of us remember and acknowledge each December 7th as Pearl Harbor Day. And that day in 1941, about 350 Japanese aircraft launched from aircraft carriers descended on Pearl Harbor in the Hawaiian Islands and what has been described since as a sneak attack, as war had not been formally declared. Most of America's Pacific Fleet, as many of you may recall, was either sunk or severely damaged, as were scores of aircraft on land. On December 8th, President Franklin Roosevelt asked Congress to declare war on Japan, as well as German and Italian allies. The same day after the declaration of war, C.E. Carlson, who was president and general manager of the Duluth Mesabi Land Range Railroad, received a Western Union telegram from Ralph Budd, U.S. Transportation Commissioner, who told him to provide adequate protection for all vulnerable facilities on your property at once. The concern was sabotage for a country's vital railroads needed to feed our country's war machine. On December 29th, Carlson received a hand-delivered letter from J. Edgar Hoover, director of the FBI, that included more explicit instructions. Included with the 13 pages was, quote, the extreme importance of maintaining an uninterrupted flow of iron ore for the mines of Lake Superior to blast furnaces and various industrial centers, unquote. The letter goes on to list specific places to be placed under 24-hour guard, including, quote, that part of the railway system running between Duluth and Two Harbors, Minnesota. Well, of course, that would include Knife River. For Knife River, instructions were for armed guards 24/7 at the bridge over the Knife River. The guards would be a civilian auxiliary to the military police. Guards appointed were Claude Lusk and Harry Welch. They're provided with a small guard shack and a Winchester rifle. That's it. Each shack had a telephone and a small coal stove. The men were issued badges and wore an armband that said police. Their job was to protect from enemy agents to parachute troops, all for $5.50 a day. All the protection given the right of ways of railroads did pay off, though, when explosives were found under the track at Waldo. The blasting cap failed to set off the dynamite when a train passed over it. An alert bridge guard spotted the wire in the explosive, sticking on the track ballast, and disconnected the charge. Evidence found at the scene indicated someone had been hiding in the brush when the guard appeared and they fled. No one was ever apprehended. Will Knife River not be spared the grief wrought to so many small and close-knit communities like Knife River? Three of its sons would die before the war ended, 4 years later. The stories of the three have been told earlier in earlier newsletters. Thanks to our historian, Heritage Center historian Todd Lindell, for providing much of the information that I'm giving you here today. Pearl Harbor Community Flagpole, or the Knife River Community Flagpole, was flown at half-mast on Pearl Harbor Day 2020 in observance of the country's Day of Infamy. First time our flag was flown at half-mast, unfortunately. We have to do that. Wanted folks to know that our flag is now being lit at night. Looks fabulous. If you head down Marina Road, you'll see it. Many thanks to Mike Rosso, the master electrician and owner of Silver Creek Electric, and also Brad Ronning, who worked with Mike for illuminating and putting the light in. We think it'll be really great. The flag will be officially dedicated to service members of the Albert Weemy family of Knife River on Memorial Day 2021, which will be observed this year on May 31st. Two Harbors American Legion Post will conduct the dedication ceremony. As many of you may recall, we did have a first flag-raising ceremony on Veterans Day 2020. That was a kind of an event unto itself. It was attended by about 100 people, I would say, and the ceremony was conducted by Two Harbors American Legion Post. Many thanks to them. Now here's a story I think you'll all enjoy. Headline reads, can this Knife River name-calling be stopped? Well, what's all this about? Well, we have some name-calling going on in Knife River that needs to be stopped. Two examples. The America Dock Road is misnamed. The road does not lead to where the steamer America once docked because America never docked at the remnants of the dock we see today. You can see it from 61 when you drive by. The dock was built in 1909 after a former dock was destroyed by a false storm in 1908. Now, many of you recall the steamer America. Well, it never tied to the lake dock, also known as the coal dock. Its actual name is the lake dock. Docks were few along the rugged North Shore, so with the sound of its whistle, fishermen, including those from Knife River, would meet offshore to unload fish and bring back groceries, mail, and news of the world. I had a painting in the issue that was done by Howard Bud Sievertson that showed a skiff rowing out to meet the America that was out just outside of Knife River to exchange fish for mail and groceries. Now, the Alger Smith Railroad, Lumber Railroad, owned most of the boats that used the dock, what's been called the coal dock, but again, it's misnamed. It's actually the lake dock. They unloaded coal from the lower lakes and took out pulpwood. The railroad would never allow a passenger freight steamer like the America to disrupt their operations, let alone create safety issues of passengers having to cross access the dock over the railroad's right-of-way and several spurs. What some people call the coal dock is also the wrong name. The dock remains that we see are the remains of the lake dock. So the proper name for America Dock Road really should be the Lake Dock Road because it leads to the remains of the lake dock. And as I said, the America never docked there. Now, to confuse things, there was a coal dock, but it was on land and trains docked there to load coal. Let me explain further. Okay, so coal came in to the lake dock from the lower lakes, and it was taken then by train a few blocks to a coal dock, which was inland, on land, and stored in huge bins until needed to fill locomotive tenders. Trains would pull alongside the dock, and chutes would open to gravity feed the tenders, much in the same way we see bulk carriers filled with pellets at the docks in Two Harbors. The coal dock was a massive structure more than 200 feet long. Few people realize how big this was. It was about where the Knife River wastewater holding tank is currently. Well, the bins were so large they could usually hold enough coal to supply trains of the winter months when the lake froze over, when boats couldn't get here from the lower lakes. Additional coal could be stored in the rail cars off the coal dock. If it appeared coal was running out, coal could be run to Duluth along the Duluth and Iron Range Railroad. The locomotive coal dock took up a lot of land where the Knife River Wastewater Collection Plant building is today. Now, Knife River people are able to buy coal from the Alger Smith for home heat. It was once reported that the general manager of the Alger Smith Company, upon seeing a cloud of black coal smoke above Knife River homes on a cold winter day, made the comment that, well, we should have charged more for that coal. Well, with the decline of logging, the coal dock became obsolete, and so was removed in 1923. And it's white pine timber reused by the railroads elsewhere. So there you have it. I don't suspect the name-calling addressed here will ever stop, but those of you who may want to flaunt your knowledge of local historical trivia can now correct anyone who incorrectly uses the term America Dock Road for the coal dock. Many thanks again to Todd Lindahl, our historian, for providing this historical information. Now, really, I mentioned about the steamer America, and I just want to talk a little bit about that. Because it kept Knife River and all the North Shore communities to Thunder Bay and around Isle Royale connected to the world. And let me explain this further. The steamer America was built in 1898. It was 183 feet in length. And for most of its life, it provided freight, passenger, and mail service to all North Shore communities from Duluth to what is now Thunder Bay and around Isle Royale to 1928. It was owned by the A. Booth Company. Its whistle signaled long-awaited news, mail, groceries, ice, passengers, and just about anything else fishing families needed, many of whom were Booth-contracted fishermen. Its captain was nicknamed Indian Smith, and he was very adept at bringing America close to shore, where fishermen could row out to it with their catches and return with their needed items. There are very few docks along the North Shore, and so transfers between skiffs and America would be dangerous, as depicted in a painting by Howard Sievertson, who's often been referred to as the Norman Rockwell, the North Shore. In the painting, it shows a skiff loaded with fish and crates and barrels of fish going out to America in a cold January day to exchange fish for needed items. The America was the North Shore's most reliable link to the world until Highway 61 was built in 1926 that connected Duluth to Thunder Bay. It effectively put the America out of business. It came to sad demise on June 7, 1928, when Captain Smith succumbed to his third mate's insistence that he could navigate the America out of Isle Royale's Washington Harbor in an early morning mist. The mate misjudged the distance of the boat from the east side of the North Gap heading out to the lake, and it struck a rock. Well, the boat immediately began filling with water, and so Captain Smith turned it around with the intent of beaching it on what appeared to be a mud bank. Unfortunately, the bank was more of a rock ledge that descended in about 93 feet of water. Well, the boat teetered on the edge of the ledge, that's hard to say, edge of the ledge, until it filled with water and then slid into the depths days later. All 16 passengers and 31 crew, though, got off safely. I've had several memorable experiences diving on America. I enjoy talking about it. The most was diving to the stern of the 93 feet of water, entering through the lazarette and swimming the length of the boat through the laundry room, over the now-exposed triple-expansion steam engine, up the staircase to the dining area, and then to the crew's quarters in the forecastle. Memorable experience. Okay, I'm just going to kind of read some news here. I had some internal news here. We talked about what the Heritage Center accomplished during the year. We had a pretty good year. I'll just summarize this briefly. I have it here month by month, but I'll just skip through that. We were hurt, as so many people, nonprofits were, by COVID. It took many of our volunteers from us. It made it more difficult to succeed with grants. And I think the most disappointing thing is that we could not get to hire contractors to get a lot of the work done that we needed done. And that's because contractors had a very good year. As you may recall, a lot of people were at home and wanting to do upgrades to their homes. Speaking of that, our Heritage Center, back to what I was just talking about, we're in a kind of a catch-22 here for grant requests. Just want to know that you know the predicament we're kind of in. We're in an awkward situation with grant requests for 2021. Well, we relied on four different funders to fund the major projects for 2020, which was to remove and replace the broken depot apron and make it ADA compliant. And we got, because of the problems I just mentioned with the volunteers and lack of contractors, we couldn't get started on the project. The contractor wasn't available until October 3rd. And we needed that contractor, Mike Osman and his company, very good people, to remove the existing cement apron that surrounded the depot and then replace it with Class 5. And then we needed about 15 different sections of concrete poured. We were able to do, in the time we had before freeze-up, we did 5 of those 14 sections with volunteers. Okay, let's keep moving right through the news here. Let me just kind of get some more stuff here from past newsletters. I want to tell you a little bit about the Congdon store. Hold on here. I'll get this out just a minute here. So much news we have from Knave River. Lots happening there. Here we go. Grocery stores. I want to do a series of reports on the different grocery stores in Knave River over the years. One was the Congdon store, and I think you'll find this one rather interesting. And I'll tell you as much as we have learned about the general stores in Knave River, but we'll start with this one, the Congdon store. The Congdon store actually starts with a fellow by the name of Pascal Pete Rosso, R-O-S-S-O, who's Knife River's depot agent from 1900 to 1934. He had a store directly behind the depot where railroad passengers could get supplies, hot lunches, and even ice cream. Well, Pete was married to Mary DeMarco, also from Knife River. Their daughter, Grace, while visiting Michigan, would meet Harold Congdon. The two would marry and move to Knife River. Well, Harold bought the store in the former Elder Smith Railroad Warehouse from Pete and moved it to the northwest corner of Scenic 61 and Marina Road. This store is now a residence. Well, Harold and Grace were quite the entrepreneurs, even while raising three children, daughters Lorraine and Evelyn and son Harold. The store was a general store as well as a post office with Grace, the town's postmaster. The store was a favorite meeting place for townspeople where they could get groceries, fresh meat, check their mail on one side of the store, and buy beer and play 1 and 2 cent slots on the other. Children had a broad selection of penny candy. What a fun place this must have been during the 30s and 40s. The Congdon store included a bar, as I said, and a slot machine. I can remember the Congdon store from when Mary and I moved from Park Point to Knife River in 1972. Along with groceries, our Duluth Sunday News Tribune would be picked up at the Congdon store. So this gave us a chance to visit with Harold. The store served more than Knife River's customers, with other customers coming from nearby Palmers, a little town that was about 3 miles away, and from the 1930s CCC camp at the site of what is now Tom's Logging Camp. Well, the three Congdon siblings all attended the Knife River School through eighth grade and then took a bus or train to high school in Two Harbors. All worked at the store and lived above and in an addition behind it. Grace Congdon died in 1950. Harold continued to run the store until giving up in the late 70s and moving in with Lorraine, his daughter. Harold died in 1981 at age 84. Interesting fellow. The Congdon store property was sold to Knife River native Pete Boogie, who converted it into a home for his family. They paved the area in front. The paved area in front became a lot for used cars. It's been a residence ever since. Now, this is kind of fun to know, is that Harold had a moment of fame in the movies. In 1972, both Harold and Knife River had bit parts in the Spence thriller You'll Like My Mother, a film directed by Lamont Johnson and starring Patty Duke, Rosemary Murphy, and Richard Thomas. I don't know how many of you can recall this movie. I thought it was pretty good. Well, in the movie, Patty Duke is the wife of a man killed in Vietnam and, while pregnant, follows her husband's insistence that should he be killed, she'd live with his mother in her mansion, which, for the movie, was Glen Sheen. Well, in one of the earlier scenes, a bus with Patty on board is seen crossing over the original bridge on Church Road and stopping at the Congdon store. It's snowing heavily, and the bus driver asks Harold about road conditions. I think that's what he did. And Harold gives a one-sentence response. Well, this fleeting moment of fame is recorded on a website that's really too long to get into on the air here, but you can Google the movie You'll Like My Mother. Another issue of our newsletter, I'll tell you about another Knife River store. Need some time to do that. Okay, something too that we're happy to see here that took place in November that I want to call your attention to is, as you recall, back in the summer, people from Two Harbors here, and I think throughout Lake County, wanted to show support and honor our emergency responders, first responders, I should say. And I'm really happy to see, particularly what was taking place around our country with all the horrible things that were going on and lack of appreciation for our police do. Well, Lee Bijou, who lives in Knife River and whose husband is a former policeman, put together a way to show gratitude for first responders in Lake County. Through our church, the Knife River Lutheran Church, we treated first responders to sweet treats from Great Lakes Candy. 84 different bags of sweets, along with totes of apples for those who don't eat sugar, were delivered with thank you cards to each department, including the Lake County Sheriff's Office, Lake County Dispatch Center, Two Harbors Police Department, Minnesota Conservation Officers, and Lake County Fire Department, and the Lake County Rescue Squad. What a nice thing. Lee said it was great fun, and I learned a lot about the number of folks who look after us and keep us safe here in Lake County. I'm going to just mention briefly here, it's kind of come and gone, it was very successful, but this year, our annual Yulebian went online and into the woods. And I'll try to summarize what took place here. I think it was about December 4th. The trail that goes above Knife River was turned into a troll trail. And this is, if some of you were aware of this, I hope you took advantage of it. But the trail went about a mile. You accessed it off the Shellhan Road, on the hillside there, north of Knife River, and it goes for about a mile through the woods. And it was really fun and great for children and families, because they could go along the trail here, they could see signs of trolls, and also enjoy some games and in general, have a very good time and learn something about Scandinavian mythology and all the creatures that are in the woods during the winter months, and how these different characters from Norwegian mythology look after the birds and people and all the wildlife. So it's kind of educational as well as fun. And I do believe this troll trail will be available in 2021 as well. And so stay tuned. We hope this pandemic will pass and we can once again return to our Yulebian, which is our Scandinavian celebration of Christmas in the true Scandinavian tradition. We're working on it already, and I hope and I do pray that the COVID will go away and we can add this troll trail to our annual Yulebian, along with our troll train, which is also very popular. The troll train, kind of like the troll trail, takes people into the woods of Knife River on a train, and actually they end up at Troll Canyon, which actually is a Sucker Ridge River bridge in the gorge and the canyon there, and believe it or not, they see trolls. So look for a lot of trolls next Christmas in the Knife River area, and we'll have lots more on the Knife River Yulebian as we get closer to the holiday season. But that's just a little advance on what's going to be taking place. And with that, I see I'm kind of running out of time here, and I think I got you pretty much current on the news, what's happening in Knife River. And I believe this is airing on Saturday. I think it's the 14th, and I hope you have a good day, and I'll be back again next month with more news from the Knife River Heritage, Heritage and Cultural Center in Knife River. News as we see it from the Cultural Center.